This editorially independent podcast is supported by Astellas Pharma.
Welcome to the special series of programs called Geographic Atrophy, Options in Clinical Therapy. My name is David Almeida. I'm a vitreoretinal surgeon and physician at Erie Retinal Research in the Center for Advanced Surgical Exploration in Erie, Pennsylvania. It's really my pleasure here to have Dr. Lisa Faye with us today.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
And Dr. Christopher Riemann from Cincinnati Eye.
Greetings and salutations. Pleasure to be with you.
Lisa, when we think about screening GA patients in the clinic, like how do you approach a patient that you consider treatment eligible or treatment somebody that you may going to present treatment to versus someone that you're thinking, this is probably not the right person for the geographic atrophy treatment?
Well, isn't this the million-dollar question? I mean, we've been talking about this for the last 2 years now. But for me personally, in my clinics, if someone is complaining about vision loss and they truly have just dry AMD, nothing else going on, either glaucoma or wet AMD or DME, that's number one, a patient that I'll look at. And then number two, if it's a patient that doesn't seem like they're really complaining, but I'm just watching, I love all the autofluorescence, and I see their autofluorescence is just encroaching, and I'm worried about one day getting that phone call that they're 20/40, and they call me, they say they've lost all vision centrally, and my fingers are crossed, hoping that they might have converted to wet macular, so I, in the olden days, would have something to treat. Those are the ones that I'm just starting with. I know AI in the future will have it where it'll show us how these people are progressing and all that kind of fun stuff. But right now with what I have, if a patient is really changing and telling me, Dr. Faye, I don't care what the vision says. You know, I can't see. I don't feel comfortable driving. Or the loved ones are saying, yeah, you know, they're just bumping into things. They're not just, she's not, or he's not enjoying the things that they used to do. Or something for me alerts me when I'm looking back at the last few autofluorescence pictures, that something just seems like it's creeping, I want to stay on top of it. That's kind of basically where I'm at right now. And just selecting patients to even discuss treatment and then going from there.
Thanks so much, Lisa. How about you, Krista? When you're thinking about the patients coming through your clinic, these patients that you're going to approach with potential for treatment?
As Lisa said, this is the $10 million question. And my answer today is quite radically different than my answer was a month ago or 6 months ago. And I suspect that my answer 6 months from now will also be different from where it is. It's really exciting and wonderful that we finally have something to offer these very large numbers of patients that have potentially blinding disease. So, I've started relatively slowly. I think that if a patient has complaints that I can relate to their dry macular degeneration and not to other disease processes, just like Lisa was saying, that's a great candidate on the one hand. On the other hand, you know, by the time they have complaints, you know, the horse might not be out of the barn, but it might be halfway out of the barn. It's already encroaching on the center of fixation. So the ideal patient for me, the ideal patient is one where the geographic atrophy has progressed through the center of the fovea in one eye and hasn't in the other eye. And I can see over a period of months or years, clear cut growth in the still good seeing eye or well seeing eye. That's the ideal patient for me, because I can tell that patient before they start having symptoms, hey, this is really exciting therapy. It's not a magic bullet. It's not going to make you see better, but it'll hopefully delay the progression to what happened in your other eye.
Thanks, Chris. I think I approach it very similar to both of you. Usually I'm trying to get to a very simple answer to a very simple question. You know, is your vision allowing you to do the things that you care about currently? And usually if they say yes, then I don't really push it any further. That's enough of an affirmation of that. But if they are complaining of it, that's when usually I'll introduce it. And for, in terms of ideal patient, my ideal patient, Chris, is exactly like yours. It's going to be that patient with subfoveal one eye. So they know where that vision loss leads to in their eye, and then one with still foveal preservation and really targeting the foveal eye. Lisa, I don't know if or I missed it. What was your ideal patient? I know you talked how you approach it, but what's going to be your ideal one for GA treatment?
So, and I'm like you guys, it's the person who's already lost vision in one eye, and even though they haven't complained, or again, they're maybe not doing what they want to do, I'll show them, you know, this is what's going on. This is congruent with what we see with your retina. It's not related to your glaucoma. It's not related to your diabetes. And sometimes it sounds so easy. Sometimes it's not that easy, but for the most part, especially if they've already lost it, because we definitely need the motivated patient as well. It's not just what they look like. They're going to have to be able to come in to receive the treatments. And some, you know, most of them have not really had to come in as often as they may have to if they decide they're going to go through the treatment. So the person needs to be motivated, as well as ideally, like we talked about, they know what happens when it's lost. And this is why we need to be proactive now.
It took me a little bit of time to understand that the paradigm, or at least the archetype of this patient, was very different, because we're used to these kind of wet AMD, just for comparison. It's a patient who's lost vision and they're trying to get back to where they were. They're very frustrated when they come to a visit and they don't see progress back to their original one. This is a completely different patient. They're coming through from the point of like, I like where I am. I don't want to change from this. So they're become frustrated when they're actually changing. So it's the opposite, you know, 180 almost approach, which is interesting in retina. How about, we said ideal patients, but how about difficult patients or the opposite? Which patients are you hesitant to really bring forth a complement inhibition for geographic atrophy? Chris, what do you think?
The hesitant ones are it's interesting. So there's two classes of patients where I tread a little bit more lightly. The first class and is actually not a medical class. It's the non-medical stuff. It's the psychosocial. We learned about biopsychosocial medicine, aspects of medicine in medical school. It's the psychosocial aspect. It's the patients that that have terrible needle phobias. It's the patients that have a lot of difficulty making it in to see us. It's the patients that have a lot of other medical comorbidities. You know, if they're, you know, sick diabetics, or if they have some sort of malignancy, or if they have orthopedic limitations and they need a wheelchair van in order to come in to see us, those are patients out, you know, we'll still talk about it with them. And the interesting thing about this aspect of it is that the psychosocial aspect of is this a good fit? Is this therapy a good fit for that patient and their family is a sometimes very long and nuanced conversation that these patients deserve to have. And sometimes if we have 4 MacOn retinal detachments in the waiting room and endophthalmitis and 3 fresh wet macular degeneration patients, we may not have the time to have those long nuanced conversations with the patient. So I think it's important to have a pathway to get that patient that conversation. And I personally use an optometrist in my clinic that I've worked with now for years. And I offload those. If I don't have the time to have the conversation with the patient in the way I want to have it, I say, you know, there's a new treatment for this. It is a good treatment. There's 2 treatments. They are good treatments. They have good side effect profiles. They are not great treatments and they don't have great side effect profiles. And whether this is the right treatment for you and your family it requires a conversation that I want to be sure we have the time to do. Let me get you plugged in to my optometrist, who is very passionate about this, and to have this conversation with you. That's the psychosocial part. The biology, like who do I not think is a good candidate? Somebody whose GA isn't growing. I think that we need, in order for me to be able to offer this therapy to somebody, I need to see geographic atrophy, and I need to see over a span of at least 2, preferably 3 visits several months apart. I need to see growth. And if I don't see growth, then obviously I don't think that that's a good patient.
No, thanks, Chris. I think that that's such an important point. And I think we can come back to challenging patients, but it's worth having a little tangent here. Elisa, like, do you need to see, because Chris mentions at least 2, maybe 3 visits that you want to see some progression to be able to say, hey, treatment here is going to be a valid approach. Do you try to validate or at least verify some sort of growth or change over time?
Yes, I'm very similar with that. It's so funny. When I first started here with AMD patients, dry AMD patients, I would see them back in 3 months. My partners were laughing at me like, what are you doing? I'm like, well, I want to explain to the patients my first time meeting them I want to tell them. They asked me, am I going to go blind? I said, well, it's my first time. It seems like it's okay. Let me see you in 3 to 4 months and we can look at the growth together. And then I stopped doing it because everyone was like, well, we don't have treatment for it. What are you doing, Lisa? So then I, started seeing them. Hey, nice to meet you. Dry AMD is not what AMD I see in 6 months. And now I've gone back to where I'm like, hey, nice to meet you. Your vision looks good. It's very extrafoveal. Seems like you're doing what you want to do. But again, my first time meeting you in your eyeballs, and I don't know how fast this is growing. And there are treatments to slow things down. Nothing's going to give anything back. And before we make that kind of commitment, we need to see how quickly this is moving. Because if it's going to take 10 years before you change, you know what? Maybe it's not the medication for you. And so I do see them now 3 to 4 months when they're new dry AMD patients to me. And I don't want them to deny that. I always want to be very truthful with them and say, yeah, there's treatments out there. I don't know if you're a candidate. And if they press more, I'll give them pamphlets about it, or I'll tell them to hear, go to the different websites, because I don't want them to think I'm hiding anything from them. But at the same time, I agree, there has to be some kind of growth, because no matter what we're thinking about safety wise, an injection in the eye is an injection in the eye, and there's a chance of endophthalmitis as rare as it is. So we want to make sure that overall they're good candidates for it and that they really will fit the mold for it.
Like, I think that's a good point, because patients usually, at least the first question they ask me always is around how will my vision improve? Not so much how much will my vision change, how will it improve? And then to understand that concept that it's not going to improve and you're really trying to minimize a decrease, yeah, I think you require at least a few visits to show that. Otherwise, I never offer this on the first visit unless they're already on that treatment from previous. So I agree. And Chris, when you're discussing to that effect with those patients, how does the first year discussion look like when you're thinking about the patients? Are you talking to them about how you're going to treat them in the first year, or are you going to wait for that later?
That's dependent on which drug I'm thinking about for them. As we know that there's two drugs, and there's been a bit of a scare, and the patients that go online and consult Dr. Google, they come in and they're scared of Syfovre, some of them. And so I've been using more Izervay recently, but I think it's completely reasonable to use either. Patients that are super worried about treatment burden, I might talk more about Syfovre. And patients that are more risk averse, I might lean in the direction of Izervay.
I think I usually mention that first year. I say, I try to ascertain, are they going to, because I usually mention every month is what the best evidence and the only evidence we have for both the drugs. So if I try to get that answer first, and if they're moving to every other month, which most definitely do 80% or more, then I have a discussion about that. Well, that's going to be off label for Izervay because they don't have a full year one data. So that becomes a little more challenging. How do you address that, Lisa, if your patient asks, how do patients do in the first year of treatment and how much treatment do they need?
So, I can quote the study to them, and they ask me, so are you using this? I say, yep, I'm using both. And well, why do you choose? Well, it depends on the person's eyeball, depends on where, how far away they live. And I give all that kind of those kind of answers. Just because, your friend has dry AMD doesn't mean your AMD is going to react the same way. Just because they need treatment doesn't mean you will, and vice versa. So, I tell patients I'm using it, and I, for the most part, because I did start using Syfovre back in March. But then we had to stop. So when people are asking me, how long I've been using it, I say it's I started a year ago almost, really to say. But I haven't looked at those patients specifically. And I tell them, look, for the studies, they have very strict criteria. So this is what's strict criteria. These are the results that one would expect if everyone fell into these criteria. And of course, people don't all fall into those criteria. So I kind of go over it that way from that aspect. But I tell them it's a long haul. When you're treating diabetes, do you just treat it for a year? No, you treat it for the rest of your life. When you're treating hypertension, do you treat it for the 1 year? No. Even wet AMD, we always talk about like, oh, it's such a treatment burden. Back when was it, 2005, 2006, when Lucentis and Avastin were out there, what do we tell people? I need to see you every month or you're going to go blind. And eventually it was like, well, I think we can try to treat and extend you and kind of go from there. So we will learn the same way of what is really needed, whether we do it on our own or the patients do it on their own for us. We will get that data. But again, I always explain to them that this is with a very strict criteria what one can expect, and know it has to be tailored from there.
I think that's a really good point, Lisa. I think that we are very new in this, and I'm not afraid to tell patients, look, it's called the practice of medicine for a reason. this is a new drug and we are learning how to use it. We have clinical trials to go on, but the problem, you know, and you know, we actually recruited into the some of the clinical trials of some of these drugs. So we've actually had a lot of experience with this drug with these drugs. But you know, being able to recruit somebody out of our waiting room into a clinical trial is exquisitely challenging. And the fact that clinical trial results come from that very carefully culled population, they can't always be extrapolated to the general population of our waiting rooms. And I think it's okay to tell patients that. And say, look, you know, these are good drugs and they have good safety profiles. They are not great drugs and they don't have great safety profiles. And what we're really trying to do is keep you in the game until something better comes along. That's what we're trying to do. And if that's 2 years or 3 years or 5 years or 10 years or, you know, and sometimes I'll talk a little bit about some of the stuff that may be on the horizon, the pie in the sky stuff, and I won't promise anybody anything, but you know, like there's really exciting work being done in this field, and we just want you to be in the game and not lose central vision, and have something to work with down the road.
Excellent, thanks, Chris. It really feels like it's the kind of the start of the beginning rather than the beginning of the end of a treatment cycle or a platform. So with that, we'll take a short break and then we'll return with a case.
This editorially independent podcast is supported by Astellas Pharma.
Well, welcome back to GA Options in Clinical Therapy. It's my pleasure to send it over to Lisa for a case presentation now.
Well, thank you very much. So I'm going to start my case here of an 81-year-old Caucasian woman with past medical history typical for an 81-year-old. Hypertension, AFib, osteoporosis, TIA, hyperlipidemia, surgical as well, hip replacement, knee replacement, medicines that go along with her medical history. And ocular history consistent with cataract surgery, OU, dry eyes, and PVDs in both eyes. And you see here on initial presentation, she was actually sent in just by, and this is several years ago, or a few years ago, where she was sent in an incidental exam after cataract surgery and seemed to have, as you see here, in both the OCT and on the autofluorescence, one of my favorites, 20/25 in both eyes. And so I told her, look, looks like you have some dry macular in both eyes, no signs of wet macular. Oh, she says, and I say, right now, you know, good vision. For the next slide you see here, this is, she's lost a follow-up, probably because she felt like her vision was fine and was doing okay. So we saw her 2 years later, and boy, do we see a difference. Amazingly, I'm not sure how she's doing this, but she's 20/40 in the right eye and 20/25 in the left eye. And we can see already that there's more involvement in the right eye than the left eye. So I said, look, you know, there's been just a drastic change in your pictures. Your vision was also a little off, and that's why you came in to see me. But are you really having any problems? No, not really. Okay, well, right now we don't have too much for you. So let me see you in 6 months. And she comes back in 5 because she did notice a change in vision. And you can see the autofluorescence here in the right eye is much more significant, and even that in the left. But she's still, quote unquote, reading 20/40 in that right eye. So she was concerned about vision loss, and at this time we actually did have some treatments. That's why I had her come back so we could discuss it. I knew stuff was coming out. Concerned about vision loss, but also the schedule of the injections and possible complications. Her daughter always comes with her, and her daughter and family were concerned about, well, wait a minute, we're going to have to bring her every, you know, month or every 2 months for treatment, and it's not going to make things better. And wait, she can get an infection, then I got to bring her in. Wait, what? And so this was a concern for both sides of the family, but her, you know, what sometimes I think was interesting with these conversations with the family was the vision was the same, and her daughter kept saying, Mom, your vision is just fine. And the mom saying, no, Mom, no, honey, I can't see the same. So we gave them pamphlets on both treatments that were available, and because the family wanted to think about it and overall what they felt would be best for them. And at the same time, I sent in for a benefits investigation and request for authorization, because I told them at the end of the day, unfortunately, if the insurance doesn't cover it, there's no discussion to be had. So I said, please come back in 3 to 4 months or sooner. And as we talked about before, they sometimes they don't always follow the schedule. She came back 6 months later. And at this time, she's really noticing a change. And her daughter is saying, "Mom, Mom, look, come on, everything's the same, Mom." And I'm showing her at this point, taking the time to show the daughter, "No, things are not the same. This is what your mom is seeing." And unfortunately, visual acuity isn't really the best marker for dry AMD and geographic atrophy. And so I show the pictures here. And again, Mom is really complaining. And, you know, we all have to know our patients, and Mom is really not a complainer. And so again, we decided to start on treatment. And that's where you can see here, progression over 3 years, both the right and left eye.
Now, I always find it helpful to understand that, you know, is this something that you're trying to keep the patient from losing vision? Are they worried about where they are right now, or are they worried about where they're going? You know, so, and this sounds like they're worried more about where they're going. They're okay where they are. Because I usually find that when the family's really corroborating the story, that's when the patient's really complaining about it. Do you find anything similar for this patient or in general, Lisa?
So for this patient, again, the big deal was I told her to come back in 3 months, and didn't come back for six because she couldn't get out to see me. And the issue was because she wasn't feeling comfortable driving by herself anymore. And so she was really going to have to rely on a family member from that aspect. And for the, again, the right eye, obviously there was foveal involvement at that point. And the left eye was significantly worsened on autofluorescence and growth there, as one could see. And I think she was like, "Wait a minute, I can't drive. It's very difficult for me to drive. If we don't do anything right now, I will be very limited and my independence will be virtually gone." And I think that was very scary to her. I know she's 81, but she had her wits about herself. She was walking without a walker. You know, she was snappy with her jokes. We always talk about puns. So she was a very lively, she's now, a lively 83 or 84 year old. And so, yes, I think that kind of discussion, not only, the biggest thing is they've lost something. What can I do so I don't lose the other eye and lose it all? That hopefully that answers your question.
I think you hit on something really great there, Lisa. You know, the family members, you know, this is a huge burden for family members that have to take a half a day off of work every month in order to do this. You know, we fill out FMLA forms all the time for these families. But the reality is that, you know, that represents a real barrier to entry for many families. And, you know, if she's still driving at least a little bit, you know, you can paint the picture of, look, when she loses foveal vision in her left eye, right, then you're going to be taking her to the grocery store, and you're going to be taking her, you know, you have to come across town and be on the highway and be in traffic to come see me. But, you know, she's going to be stuck in her home, and she might have to move in with you because she can't take care of herself anymore, right? Because she can't see. And these treatments might give you a chance to kick that can down the road a little bit. And that's sometimes very compelling.
Excellent. Great points. And it really speaks to, it's a different discussion than when these patients are coming that we're used to with something vision loss from, let's say, neovascular AMD versus dry. Well, I want to say a sincere thanks once again to Lisa and Chris for their wonderful cases and comments. We really see that when we're discussing geographic atrophy and looking at these options in clinical therapy, that the discussion is different. And because of that, we have another episode coming up. So tune in for that. And more so, Lisa's, Dr. Faye's case will be on iTube. So check it out there. You'll be able to see the case that we discussed here on the program. Thanks very much.